Good morning. My name's Dennis Gray. This is a great meeting location for me because I work about 20 or 30 minutes from here at the University of Florida Mid-Florida Research and Education Center at Apopka. So it's just up the road. What I want to do today is talk about, I guess you could say it's our continuing saga to develop methods to genetically improve grapevine. And I've been at it at the university for well over 30 years now, putting together all the pieces. And it occurred to me about a year ago that we've really turned a corner in general in plant genetic improvement, as we've become able to start to work with endogenous genes and promoters. Those are genes that are from the same plant that we want to improve. And this is now called precision breeding. So today I'm going to cover some preliminary material that I am now presenting in a way that I believe will be more understandable to a wider group of people. And looking forward instead of looking backwards, as it seems like we've been doing in biotechnology. So what is precision breeding? It's a method of crop genetic improvement in which DNA sequences of known function are transferred between sexually related species using their mitotic pathway instead of their meiotic mechanism to produce progeny with specific traits. The outcomes are significantly more predictable than that from conventional breeding, where one half of the genes from each of two parents are uncontrollably shuffled and combined during meiosis. And I'll go into this a little bit. But first, I like to tell people, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but not like this in most of the world. Some basic tenets that we recognize in crop improvement, and that is, with very, very few exceptions, all crops utilized for food and fiber have been genetically improved by humans. Crops like corn didn't even exist in nature and only evolved through deliberate actions. I'm just going to show one example of a crop that was created by mankind. And I think most of us know this. Corn was traced back to a grass in northern Mexico called teosinte. And genetically, it was altered or became altered, but selected to produce the corn that the Europeans discovered when they landed in North America. In fact, the current domesticated corn is completely non-fertile with teosinte. And just an example, this goes on and on. Tomatoes, potatoes, you name it, everything has been genetically modified by us. So another tenet is that these crops have been needed. They've fed the world, and they account for the great diversity of the foods that we all enjoy in this country. And in other countries, some of the foods that are absolutely needed for survival. And we continue to make improvements to meet future demands. So I want to talk about very briefly conventional breeding to set the context of what I'll say next. We all know this. Conventional breeding utilizes the plant's sexual reproductive cycle, in which meiosis functions to create gametes, each with one half of the parental DNA. Male and female gametes fuse, they reconstitute progeny with the full but rearranged amount of DNA. And if you look at the pictures, it's kind of like meiosis and syngamy are the same mechanism going in opposite directions in ways. So meiosis reduces the amount of DNA, and syngamy recombines and increases it back to normal. But meiosis is meant to cause variation, and it's considered to be an evolutionary mechanism to create, to provide a survival mechanism as environments change. There are several mechanisms within the process of meiosis that create extreme amounts of variation. First of all, the recombination that's obvious, but then also crossing over and transposition. If you look towards the bottom, crossing over is very well known. You can see it under a microscope with model systems. And with crossing over, whole pieces of chromosomes can move, they can be cut out, or they can be duplicated and move relatively relatively randomly. Transposition is kind of the same thing. It's enzyme driven. Small pieces of DNA jump from one strand to another. These are the jumping genes that Barbara McClintock won a Nobel Prize for discovering. It was a major breakthrough, showing how quickly plants could modify their genomic structure. Transposition is extremely common. It's hard to follow. In corn, it's the most studied, and it's estimated that the current corn genomic structure is composed by transposition. So it's an environmental mechanism. It's kind of a fast attack mechanism. Transposons can carry promoters in genes. They can move and cut genes in half and disable them. When promoters are moved into a new strand, they can activate genes that weren't supposed to be activated. So the point I'm trying to make is there's just a huge amount of variation that occurs with conventional breeding. So how did precision breeding come to be? It took three technologies to be developed and merged. Number one, which is something I've worked on for many, many years with grape, is the manipulation of single cells to grow into plants. Number two, methods to insert genes into plant chromosomes and so that they'll express. And then most recently, and this is what's enabling this technique, the ease of DNA sequencing and computer analysis has allowed us to open Pandora's box and start looking at and testing unbelievable numbers of different sequences and mapping the traits that they create. This just shows up. It's a very simple concept. We use a promoter from the plant, gene from the plant, and a terminator from the plant. There may be issues where we put two genes or more, but it's like this. So they're fragments that are inserted with very little modification. The insertion sites are random, similar to that occurring by crossing over and transposition. And this means that field testing to select the most functional plants still is needed, but the testing should be far less extensive compared to conventional breeding, which is in fact bombarded by the variations that I've mentioned. So, to grapevine. Why create precision bred grapevine? Grape is unique among all crop plants because of its highly prized sensory attributes. In 2010, it was determined that only 35 elite varieties of grape accounted for 66% of global production. And this number, this number is continually decreasing as consumers seek these well-known elite varietals. But the problem is these varietals suffer from various diseases among the different regions that they're grown in and require substantial chemical control. In northern Italy, I've heard that they use 18 fungicide sprays a season. And this is one of the reasons, if you read news to consumers, grape is considered to be one of the more contaminated crops, whether it is or not. But there's obstacles to grape improvement. The elite varieties can't be improved by breeding, conventional breeding. Like many perennial crops, grape is an outcrosser. It's self-incompatible and exhibits inbreeding depression. It can't be selfed to create the inbreds needed to transfer only specific traits, such as disease resistance. So precision breeding offers the, quote, possibility, we need to test this, of transferring just these traits without perturbing the other traits. So I'm just going to show a couple pictures that enable this approach for grape. Number one, single cell regeneration. We've developed the embryogenic cultures systems for many, many varieties now of grape that allow single cell regeneration. And if you look at this cell cluster, it's impossible to prove, but looks for all the world like a three cell embryo. And you can see embryos coming from suspensors and in masses, and they germinate into plants. They're clonal plants. So if a gene is placed into one of those cells and it successfully grows, it will produce a plant with the gene in all cells. Number two, inserting the genes. Particle bombardment and agrobacterium-mediated gene insertion all operate in grape. The top picture shows transient expression from bombardment. The bottom picture shows using agrobacterium that we can cause expression in all tissues of the grape. And you might note this is not a precision bred piece. It's a tool that was developed as we moved along to accelerate this work so that we can then learn to put only the genes that we want into grape. So here's what we've been doing. Grape was sequenced about 5 years ago, and it's been available for analysis since then. We had a new computer waiting, plugged in the day that sequence was published. So we've been at it. I want to mention just four different genes that we've been studying. MYB1A is a transcription factor that prompts anthocyanin production. VVTL1 causes fungal resistance. PR1, fungal and bacterial disease resistance, and ALB, fungal resistance. These are just some pictures of the anthocyanin gene showing its various uses. On the bottom panel, in particular, we use it very profitably for promoter analysis. The VVTL1, tomatin-like protein gene, has been shown to cause a degree of resistance to powdery mildew, and in the field, black rot, which is the first disease that comes in. These are Thompson seedless. Fruit rot is very exciting to us because the VVTL1 gene, these are field-grown Thompsons, kept at room temperature, turn into raisins in the plants that express the gene, whereas the controls rot. And similarly, in the greenhouse with Syrah and the Vitis vinifera albumin gene. VVPR1, and tomorrow my colleague Zijin Lee will give a presentation in more depth on this gene, has worked great in the field. You can see the left panels, Sauvignon Blanc. We have to keep planting the controls because they keep dying. These are some observations primarily that I've come up with. Precision breeding does circumvent the variation-inducing meiosis by utilizing the mitotic pathway. And this is akin to the selection of useful random somatic mutations from axillary buds, but differs in that it's highly controlled and predictable. The recognition and selection of mutated branches have resulted in strains of elite grape varieties, as well as useful traits in other crops like nectarines and pink-fruited citrus. Compared to conventional breeding, it causes much less perturbation. It was easier to write than to say. The main thing is that we have to get these plants out into real field tests instead of locked away in controlled, regulated spots so that we can see if they work. And for acknowledgments, we've had some great support from the SCRI program. Florida Viticulture supports this work and has supported it for 30 years. And, of course, the Florida Ag Experiment Station, the older I get, the more thankful I become, really enable everything. So, thank you.